Ethical Enclaves, the Precursor to Agorism, Part 2.
Financial independence, country shopping, van nomadism, security culture, ethical enclaves, crypto anarchy, legal interstices, survivalism. Join your hosts, Shane and Kyle, as they explore this freedom strategy known as Vaunting. You're listening to the Vaunting Podcast.
All right, and welcome to the Vaunting Podcast, the podcast making you invulnerable to coercion. I'm your host, Shane, here to deliver a brief introduction to this episode, and then I'll turn you over to Kyle and I's conversation. But first, since governments are the primary coercers upon individuals, the Vaunting Podcast is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. Reuse and modification is permitted to anyone, except for governments and the agents thereof. You can learn more at BIPCOT.org. So what this means is that if you want to, you know, repost TVP episodes on your YouTube channel, you want to run them on, pirate radio or anything like that, feel free. Do anything you possibly want to with this content, unless you're an agent of the state, unless you're a bludgy. So there you have that. This episode is titled Ethical Enclaves, the Precursor to Agorism, Part 2, and the show notes can be found at vaunipodcast.com/15-2. First off, if you haven't listened to Part 1, do that first. vaunipodcast.com/15. That episode contains the crux of the discussion on ethical enclaves. You know, what Rayo said, comparing and contrasting Vaunty with Agorism, etc. Just some really, really important stuff, some foundational things to listen to before moving forward. But we still have some more important things to cover today. Namely, we'll run through a page on Kyle's website called Tax Ban or Regulate. We'll provide an overall conclusion to ethical enclaves and discuss the most important things to take away as we progress through Season 2. One other note. The article that goes along with this two-part episode is not ready for release yet, but I'm hoping it will be soon. Kyle's been busy with exporting labor, so, you know, please bear with us as we work on, getting ahead again, like we did for Season 1 where we had, four episodes ahead of time. So we had no issues there. But yeah, we're working on it. Working on getting back to that point. But enough rambling. Let's talk about ethical enclaves. Enjoy. All right, so I think we've, sufficiently, answered Rayo's questions as much as we can without, getting into Season 3 already. So, there was something else that we wanted to kind of discuss, and I think it's going to be particularly relevant to, discussion on, ethical enclaves and black and gray market trading and things of that nature. And you actually have a website, or you have a page on your website. It's right there on the main tab, thelastbastille.com. Bastille is spelled B-A-S-T-I-L-L-E. It's tax ban or regulate. So I guess first off, just tell us a bit about the page and the intention for it.
Well, basically, you could say in a sense, it's the libertarian game show that hasn't yet been put on TV, right? Tax ban or regulate. I can see it now, right? I have a little spinny wheel or whatever. Anywho, the idea behind this page, all joking aside, was to basically make a point about victimless crimes. And was to kind of show that as bad as the federal government is, the federal government ain't the only American government that does the whole victimless crime routine. And so the idea was to basically document and list basically different forms of victimless crimes that are basically prosecuted by these different American governments. So in accordance – and so as mentioned on the page, in accordance with the legal maxims of nulla poena sine lege, no penalty without a law, and ignorantia juris non excusat, ignorance of the law is no excuse, I present for your enlightenment the politically binding legal codes for where I happen to live, arranged in order by jurisdiction. So these would be the Code of the City of Austin, the Texas Transportation Code, the Texas Government Code, the Texas Alcohol Beverage Code, the Texas Education Code, the Texas Health and Safety Code, the Texas Penal Code, the Texas Administrative Code, that's fourth branch of government, by the way, and the United States Code.
That's too much code for me, man.
Yeah.
Like when I think about coding, there's no such thing as like too much. I guess programmers might disagree, but there's no such thing as like too much coding when it comes to computer programming, like developing some of these, encryptions and things. But that's a lot of codes.
Yeah, and most of them are at the state level for Texas and all that. So kind of keep that in mind. Oh yes, Texas is like this brave Wild West place. It's like, You know, come on, really? I guess those people don't live here, but I do. So
on that note, just as a little tangent. So if you're going to strategically relocate, if you could, would you get out of Texas?
You know, at this juncture, I honestly don't know, because there actually are several batches of people here who just frankly just commit civil disobedience, and they for now get away with it. So I guess at that point, it's more a question about risk tolerance. Like, you know, how agorist do you want to get? And so, yeah, if you're more willing to go along that line, you know, please come to Texas. You know, we could really use the help. But and you're right, Derek Bro.
As far as the government of Texas, though, like if you were going to like strategically relocate to find a government that was more conducive, would you move, like, if you could find such a place?
Again, I honestly just don't know, because you could kind of play that either way. Let me put it this way. Derek Bros is a Texan, right?
Oh, yeah. Houston.
He and I are dealing with the same government at that level. So that's kind of interesting, right? So you can't open carry legally unless you have the concealed carry license and so forth. Like, he's dealing with that same law that I am, for example, among other things, right? Cannabis is still illegal unless it's medicinal marijuana. Even then, it's only for the epilepsy patients and so on and so forth, right? So whether we're talking guns and weed or other things, he and I are in a lot of ways dealing with very similar laws. And that's before we get into the really interesting stuff like nuisance abatement, which I hope he'll never have to deal with, but they'll probably try and do it to him anyway at some point.
Thankfully, on that note, I brought that up specifically when I interviewed him as far as their location. It's they're looking at, like, he mentioned, no show cash. As far as he's apparently running into some issues, and he said, yeah, we're gonna do some more research and find something that's unincorporated, so we don't have to deal with that sort of thing. So he's familiar with that, thankfully. So hopefully they don't have to deal with that in the future. But yeah, go ahead. I apologize.
No, it's fine. And no, I'm glad he's making a go of it. I just hope the experiment turns out well. But hell, you know, worst case scenario, if it doesn't go well, you know, it's important to learn from that too, right? So anyway, regarding this tax ban or regulate page, well, I'll just very briefly, I won't give the legal citations, which are on the page, and I encourage people to look at it, click on them so they can see, oh, there really are laws in the books banning or regulating or taxing these various activities and such. So just to kind of in broad brushstrokes, for example, the municipal government that's known as the City of Austin, dumpster diving is illegal. It is several $1,000 fines.
So banned.
Oh, straight up banned. Yeah. There's also the infamous plastic bag ban of several years ago. In fact, I also linked to a particular bureaucrat, a particular annoying statist by the name of Gina McKinley, who does deserve to be ostracized. And the reason in particular why she does is Gina McKinley bragged about it on the local mainstream KXAN about how wonderful the plastic bag ban was. So you would
be breaking the law in Austin if you use plastic bags.
If businesses within the incorporated limits of the City of Austin give customers, as per complimentary social norms, a plastic bag to basically carry their purchases in, then yes, they would be violating a municipal ordinance and would be taxed and fined, or not taxed, excuse me, they would be fined as such. And Gina McKinley.
Wow. So essentially, if they were to continue, if they were to, you know, civilly disobey, they'd probably get their license pulled.
That's one approach. But,
wow.
But yeah, Gina, well, there's a reason why, you know, eco-fascism is a big deal here in Austin. And so, yeah, Gina McKinley was the little statist bureaucrat who bragged about it on local KXAN about how wonderful the plastic bag ban was and we're going to save the environment and all this kind of jazz. And yeah, so you can thank her and the others on the Austin City Council who pushed and pushed and made that plastic bag ban happen, because without government, how would plastic be incorporated into, you know, the environmental scheme of whatever the heck? So that's kind of what it is. That's the eco-fascism at play here. And that's just one form of it. But that was a particularly heinous one that the local government here did. Continuing on, let's see, selling lemonade without a license. Nope, that wasn't just in random places in Pennsylvania. That's right here in Austin. You can't do it, kids. So there's that.
That's interesting. So when kids open up like lemonade stands, like their parents, maybe ignorant to get jurors non excuse out, they may not know that it's illegal. Sending their kids out there to practice in the counter economy. I like it.
Yeah, and worse for the more constitutionalist patriot types, that's Texas Administrative Code Section 229.162. So yeah, dealing with the fourth branch as far as like the lemonade stands go, because they actually technically license it and such. And so, yeah, good luck selling lemonade in Texas, or at least in Austin, without a license. So that's
can you imagine like, hey, mommy, I want to open up a lemonade stand. Okay, Johnny, let's go on down to the city of Austin. We'll get your permit, and then you can open up your lemonade stand. See, this is how government works. It's just so great, isn't it? It's like, well, mommy, why do we have to pay for this? I just want to sell lemonade. It just seems like just so wrong in so many ways.
Well, hey, that same kid's already being run through the grinding mill of
Hopefully not. Hopefully he's just a little entrepreneur, unschooled entrepreneur. But if he was an unschooled entrepreneur, they probably wouldn't do that. But anyways.
Well, yeah, or the kid would just be a straight up kind of on his way to being an agorist, right? Because his parents already were, right? I mean, that's kind of the idea here. But anyway.
Yeah.
So anyway, loitering is illegal within city limits. Oh, and then there was the infamous no camping ordinance, which was actually incredibly discriminatory to the homeless population here. So kind of like how Portland, Oregon has a notorious homeless problem in the sense of just a lot of people just live on the streets, quite literally. Austin's the same way, but in many ways almost worse than the Portland government did. What the Austin government did was that they just said straight up, you cannot be homeless. It is illegal to essentially be homeless within the limits of the city of Austin. You know, you can't sleep on a park bench. You can't sleep under an overpass. It's literally illegal. They said so. That's what the whole no camping ordinance is. Wow. It is a crime to be homeless in Austin. That's how bad it's gotten here. Continuing on. Smoking tobacco cigarettes in public. Well, technically what the law says is, you know, within, what was it, 25, 35 feet of a building or whatever. But then the...
That's pretty standard. Yeah, that's same here in the comedy state of Illinois.
Yeah, but then the city of Austin was like, yeah, let's go stricter. Let's just say you can't smoke any... But of course, people smoke cigarettes within the limits of the city of Austin every day. I should know because at work, there's like a separate area that's far away enough from the building where people can just go and smoke for their 15-minute breaks, which are paid, by the way. So yeah, I guess there's that. Panhandling. So remember those homeless people who can't sleep outside because it's illegal? Well, the act of panhandling is illegal too, and it happens all the damn time.
So the homeless are just screwed there unless they want to, break the law.
Oh no, they're constantly breaking the law. That's the point. They are illegals, at least in a sense, even though they may not be crossing borders, political borders and so forth. Yeah, the homeless population in Austin are just straight up illegal. You know, not because of skin tone, not because of nationality, not because of whatever the heck. It's their behavior and I guess you could say their lifestyle or where they happen to end up, which is basically with nothing. Yeah, so being homeless is a crime in Austin, apparently. Disobeying a cop. So I want you to jump up and down. No, I don't think so, officer. Hands behind your back, you're under arrest. Disobeying cop, it's illegal. Nope, can't do it. And then, of course, my personal favorite, failure to identify or show photo ID. Your papers, please, in the land of the free, within the limits of the city of Austin. Failure to identify or show photo ID is a municipal violation. So how do you so people still want to live in cities? How do you like living in cities now? You know, just saying.
Yeah. And I guess let's just for listeners that may be confused while we're going through this, why is this relevant to the ethical enclaves? I know the answer to this, but why is this relevant to ethical enclaves and agorism?
It's relevant because it's showing how whether it's people like the agorists or Venuans who are working inside of an ethical enclave are basically resisting lawfare. Which, of course, is defined as – maybe we should have mentioned this at the beginning, but lawfare is basically defined as the government's use of its own laws as a weapon of war against the domestic population. And so when they do things like they basically essentially make homelessness a crime, or they make entrepreneurship by children selling lemonade by children a crime, when they make complementary social norms like giving a friggin' plastic bag to your customers a crime. Hell, even the dumpster diving would be more akin to the homeless people, right? You know, it's just like, really, this is where it's at. So it's not going after bank robbers. It's not going after con men. It's not prosecuting thieves. It's not punishing murderers. It's not, you know, whatever, like real crimes with actual victims. No, no, no. It's like homeless people and entrepreneurs and like certain people doing certain forms of human action. That's the focus. That's like on the books. And again, my favorite part, Shane, there's absolutely zero conspiracizing here. I am talking about what the government's laws say. Again, no federal government involved. This is the code of the city of Austin. Is the source for this portion of it? Anyway.
Yes. So I think what's most important here, and this is something that I mentioned, you know, Adam Cash and Guerrilla Capitalism earlier. You know, like everyone, you know, breaks the law. I mean, it's impossible not to, right? With all of these, you know, whether it's you know, the city of Austin, or whether it's you know, whatever county that is, or whether it's you know, Texas, or whether it's United States, or whatever, you know, everyone, you know, breaks the law, and there's no possible way. And holy heck that, you know, they can actually enforce all of these. I imagine, you know, smoking tobacco cigarettes in public, I'm sure that's, you know, probably not enforced much. I would imagine so, because it seems like they would be, you know, busy all day, every day, you know, writing, you know, fines and tickets for that. And, you know, even though, you know, obviously the... obviously, they have to respond to the public in some way, like, oh, there's, you know, there's been a crime outbreak. We need that dealt with. So they'll focus on that and not focus on, you know, smoking tobacco cigarettes in public. So there is that selective enforcement, right? So everyone breaks the law every day, right?
Yeah. And I'll go through a couple more of these just for purpose of time. So if we go to like the state of Texas, for instance, driving without a license, that's violation of Texas Transportation Code. And I remember there was that whole series I did, the extra constitutional series, which I think we did the episodes on the normal LUA series about that. So driving without a license. Oh, yeah. You are running afoul of the TTC and all that, because, of course, you don't have a right to travel according to the friggin' Texas government for all intents and purposes, which, of course, in that series, in that interview and such, we went in more detail on that. Practicing law without a license. That's right out of the Texas government code. You cannot do it. You know, if you basically try to act as counsel for someone else and they pay you, nobody, you need a license to do that from the little Texas state bar, the little monopoly on, you know, apparently being counsel or something. I don't know. There's the blue laws. Actually, a lot of college students will probably take an interest in this, and people who just drink a lot. Blue laws. You cannot sell liquor on Sundays, and you cannot sell beer on Sundays before noon.
We had something like that. I used to live in a small town right outside of Bloomington, where I live now. And you had to. There was you know, two gas stations in this small town, and you know, due to, I don't know exactly what it was, but they could not sell alcohol on Sundays. So if you wanted to get alcohol, you had to drive 15 minutes into town, which is not bad. Like, but still, yeah, we have similar stuff here, you know, locally.
Right. Now there was the issue about openly carrying a handgun. Handgun, of course, being a pistol or a revolver. That's different from a long gun, which is a rifle or shotgun. So openly carrying a handgun, it used to be banned. Now it's regulated in the sense that it's licensed. So the law did change due to lots of grassroots lobbying and everything involved with that form of political crusading, where essentially now that as long as you have a concealed carry license, you can now openly carry a handgun in Texas. That's what the current law is. So the law did change on that.
So we're from banned too regulated.
Hey,
and taxed.
Hey, it sounds a lot like cannabis in Colorado, right? So if you think about it, again, guns and weed, one more time. The gun situation in Texas has gone from banned to regulated and taxed, like you just said, very much like how in Colorado, cannabis used to be banned. Now it's gone to tax and regulated. Isn't that a little coinky-dink about how our democratic republics are also wonderful?
Okay. I'm looking at this list here. Skip forward to the obscenity one and sex toys. Please do.
Oh, skip forward?
Yeah, dude, skip to that one. I'm curious.
Okay, well, yeah, this is right out of the Texas Penal Code, mainly out of Chapter 43, although the punishments are, of course, in Chapter 12, and the specific citations are on the page. Okay, basically, the issue here was a couple different things. I'll mention one just in passing for purposes of time. Pretty much if you own more than, say, six dildos, and that was actually specifically mentioned, if I remember correctly, that is actually the lawyers consider that proof of intent to distribute, kind of like narcotics, proof of intent to distribute. Therefore, you're a bad person. Therefore, you need to be, I think it was a misdemeanor, if I remember correctly, or something to that effect.
Wow.
Yeah. So
let's say like, I guess maybe comparing in some way, like if I have six microphones because, I have all six versions of the Audio Technica. Then like it compare like let's just say kind of similar to that, like if you have more than six of those, you're intending to sell those microphones, and in this case, if you have more than six sex toys, you're intending to sell. Is that kind of what I'm gathering here?
Yeah, something to that effect. Actually, hold on, I'm trying to pull this up right now, if you just wouldn't mind just a moment. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of how bad it's gotten. It's really just kind of like, really? That's the extent to which they're just kind of really off the reservation, as it were.
And I want to keep this, PG. So like, what if like I have microphones for different purposes, like some of them are for voiceover, some of them for podcasts, some of them are for live radio, some of them for recording, maybe me drumming, some of them are for, there's different purposes for microphones, right?
Yeah.
So that's crazy. That's crazy.
Well, yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of the idea here is that, and yeah, I am kind of tap dancing a little bit here, trying to find something I can briefly quote. I might not be able to find it because remember, when you're looking in the laws and things, a lot of times they try to make it really kind of hard to find anything. But the citations are there on the page if people kind of want to follow up on that. But yeah, it's just, yeah, you have too many sex toys. It's just, it's wrong. You're a bad person and all of that. And so it's just kind of unfortunate that that's kind of where it's gone. And
what if you're a collector?
Yeah.
If you get a license for that, you're probably okay.
Actually,
right?
Hold on. I found the exact reference. Here we go. Section 43.23, paragraph F. A person who possesses six, that was the limit I was trying to remember, a person who possesses six or more obscene devices, as defined earlier in section 43.21, something seven, a person who possesses six or more obscene devices or identical or similar obscene articles is presumed to possess them with intent to promote the same. So yeah, they just said it right there.
Oh, so it's promotion, it's not sale.
Mm-hmm, yep.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really overly broad.
That seems Texas seems really Puritan.
No kidding. And then of course
wow.
Of course.
So 5 is okay. 5 is okay,
yeah,
but 6, oh man, no, that extra one, you just can't do it. You can't do it.
And of course, obscene device is defined in section 43.21. 7, obscene device means a device including a dildo or artificial vagina. So that's applicable here too, by the way. Designed or marketed as useful primarily for the stimulation of human genital organs. So yeah, actually it is actually going both ways, as it were. So it's not just
wow,
the one.
Talk about like,
yep.
So social engineering down to the point of like,
yep.
So prostitution is illegal, and then it's like, okay, yeah, you can't even do this in your own house if you like.
You've had too many.
if you prefer different microphones for different things, you just can't do it. I mean, you can't have, you know, more than five. You just can't do it.
Yeah, basically, I mean, that's how
control freaks. That's crazy.
Well, yeah, even more stereotypical statists don't like this particular law, but that is what it says in the Texas Penal Code in Chapter 43, period. At the end of the day, I mean, that's just what it is. So anyway, going on down the list of other stuff, yeah, prostitution's illegal, bigamy's illegal. There must be a minimum wages per the Texas Labor Code. Interestingly enough, in Chapter 62 of the Labor Code, it actually ties the minimum wage to the federal minimum wage. So therefore, any type of hiring that somebody might want to do, whether it's cash under the table or whatever, below the minimum wage is technically black market by definition, which is why the minimum wage is so wicked, at least as far as that goes. Certain forms of gambling in Chapter 47 of the Penal Code. It might as well be illegal for all intents and purposes. Truancy, yeah, I can't do that. Interestingly enough, according to the Penal Code, desecrating Old Glory or the Lone Star flags by burning is illegal, even though the U.S. Supreme Court said it's okay to burn the it's okay to burn Old Glory because that old court case from the 60s or whenever. Let's see, panhandling is still legal, disorderly conduct, which basically means anything the cops don't like you doing, which is so overly broad. Like, oh, you talk back to me. That's disorderly conduct. Turn around, hands behind your back kind of thing, right? Jaywalking. Actually, that actually happened to a local here right here in town. She was a jogger. Don't remember her name right offhand. This was a couple years ago. But she was, quote, jaywalking, and they threw her down, arrested her, and all that. I mean, they really roughed her up pretty bad.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the and ironically enough, it's actually out of the TTC, the Transportation Code, Chapter 552, actually. That's interesting. Euthanasia is illegal, by the way. So, yeah, there's that. Cannabis possession, that's Health and Safety Code and the Penal Code. Possession of drug paraphernalia, that's Health and Safety Code and Penal Code again. Public intoxication, smoking tobacco cigarettes in public again, disobeying the cop. Failure to identify or show photo ID, that's Penal Code Chapter 38, actually. Resisting arrest, which is always a fun one, even if they didn't have a justified reason to arrest you in the first place, even resisting them at all in this Orwellian nightmare is still illegal. There's failure to appear, which of course is bail jumping, and that's out of the Penal Code. And my personal favorite of the Texas portion of this is something called escaping unlawful custody. Now, last time I checked, ladies and gentlemen, if it's unlawful custody, that's like a legal euphemism for friggin' kidnapping. So if you escape unlawful custody, if you escape a kidnapper, I guess, unless this is being defined some other way, that is actually a friggin' crime. So maybe the kidnapping may or may not be, and even if it's unlawful custody, I guess would be an arrest that wasn't justified, I suppose. Escaping even that is still legal. So let's say the cop or a real kidnapper, if you will, basically throw you in a basement or the back of a squad car or whatever, and later it was like, hey, they shouldn't have done that, it's like a crime and stuff or whatever, you getting out of there, like breaking a window, for instance, nope. Chapter 38 says you can't do it, and the punishments are provided in Chapter 12 of the Penal Code. So that's Texas for you, the great wild Texas with the cowboys and the goons. Yeah, I just read you a list of stuff.
You know, that doesn't make me go move with that. I you know, back when I was a little naive, it was like I thought Texas was this bastion of freedom. I thought it was. And you know, I was like, yeah, you know, I want to move to Texas at some point. Now, you know, I mean, we've gone over some of this stuff in the past couple of years, but yeah, no, I have no interest in Texas, none whatsoever. I prefer the open ocean, but that's just me.
and then, of course, just very briefly going over some federal laws, because that itself would be like an entire lifetime going over United States code. Obviously, tax evasion, willful failure to file, not paying the individual mandate tax, Obamacare and all
and
that.
These would be the first two, tax evasion, willful failure to file, might correlate very nicely with ethical enclaves and or agorism. So,
right.
Those two are probably pretty crucial.
Right, and not paying the individual mandate tax is tightly tied to the federal income tax, obviously. The minimum wage, obviously, as was mentioned, Texas Labor Code ties it to the federal minimum wage and all that. Can't possession of cannabis, that's all Title 21. Selling drug paraphernalia, interestingly enough, is considered a separate offense against the state or federal government, I should say. Oh, one of my personal favorites, making false statements to an officer, that's Title 18, Section 1001. Usually, I think they did this with some celebrities on occasion and all that. Oh, she made a false statement. Obstruction of the mail, that's Title 18 as well. One of my personal favorites, copyright infringement. Ooh, a combination of Title 17 and Title 18.
And on that note, just for the purpose of, mentioning that, just go copy this, share this, remix it, whatever the hell you want to do. Well, we don't care. Just go do whatever you want with this episode. Just go for it.
Of course. Actually, this might be interesting, especially if we're to revisit it for the sailboating episode and later in this season. But apparently there's an offense, Title 18, Section 1025, false pretenses on high seas and other waters. So whatever the heck that is, it actually specifically has to deal with being on the oceans. Let me read this real quick.
Quote, whoever upon any waters or vessel within the special maritime and territorial jurisdiction of the United States by any fraud or false pretense obtains from any person anything of value or procures the execution and delivery of any instrument of writing or conveyance of real or personal property. Or the signature of any person as maker, endorser, or guarantor to or upon any bond, bill, receipt, promissory note, draft or check, or any other evidence of indebtedness or fraudulently sells, barters. Okay, this looks more more similar to that's not relevant to what we're gonna be talking about, open ocean sort of stuff. Yeah.
Well, so. Again, notice the jurisdictional limitation right at the beginning there, the territorial waters of the United States and all that.
12 miles.
Right. So if you're within those 12 miles, then that's kind of where things get interesting, right? But if you're outside of that, then yeah, the rules change, don't they? In the sense that there aren't any. Anywho.
What rules?
Yeah, exactly. Then, of course, there's civil asset forfeiture, and I got all the citations for that. And then finally, we have interstate transportation of firearms because nobody has personal property rights anymore, according to the federal government. And then, of course, probably the coup de grace is the conspiracy to commit any offense against the United States, which, of course, is cited at 18 U.S.C. Section 371. So, those were different governments. I would have included the laws on the county government, but I honestly can't. I've been actually trying intermittently to get access to the county ordinances, but they won't let me. So that's kind of interesting. That's a little bit of a side note. So the point of going over all these, just for people to kind of comprehend this, is kind of showing there is more than a market demand for an ethical enclave in any of these activities and more. If somebody could figure out how to basically profitably, well, make a profit at trying to basically circumvent any of this stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, you could sell non FCC regulated microphones. You can probably yeah. Obviously, I'm not keeping this PG. Yeah, going back to the microphones here. I mean, there's a lot of stuff you could do as far as ethical enclaves go. There's just the absurdity of the laws and just. Again, reiterating the fact that, legality does not equal morality. For example, jaywalking. Is there anything immoral about that?
No, of course not.
No, there's no victim. You can't claim the road is a victim. You can't claim the lines where you're supposed to cross at the crosswalk. You can't claim that they're a victim. Actually 100% of this stuff. I mean, there's no victim. There's no victim and the state cannot, there has to be an actual, identifiable person, for there to be a victim in a crime. So yeah, this is obviously just a bunch of nonsense. So if you didn't already, think before that, or if you didn't already feel before that, when you break laws, you feel great about it. you know, unjust laws. You just feel fantastic about it. If you didn't already feel that way, I mean, I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean,
this should just show you the complete absurdity, and just the micro, like it's not even micro, it's even worse in micromanaging, right? It's just like every aspect of your life is regulated by some sort of law, and therefore, in order to find freedom, in order to be a Vonnegut, I mean, there's going to be some of these things that like you're going to have to you know, violate, and beyond that, I mean, you should feel good about it. You really should.
Right. And also, you know, for those folks, so this was referenced earlier, I'll mention it here again. You know, the legal interstices episode from season one, right? The legal interstices can help you in some circumstances, depending on what it is and all that. But again, like Rayo said, you know, the problem with relying upon legal interstices is that laws and their interpretations of it often change. So when you're in a position where a legal interstice either doesn't work anymore because a loophole has been closed or something along those lines, or there never was an even option for that in the first place, it's just straight up, you know, been illegalized, it's been outlawed, then what do you do? And I think the ethical enclaves are one answer to that.
Oh yeah, I certainly agree. I certainly agree. So I guess some conclusionary points here. To reiterate this, I mean, ethical enclaves are simply an option that Vonnegutans can you know, take up if a circumstance, you know, arises where you know, you could trade them, you know, a barrel of you know, storable food for I don't know, a really nice tent or whatever it is. Or if, you know, as we've kind of found out, you know, Rayo liked smoking weed, if he, you know, decided, you know, trade some of his storable foods for some marijuana, you know, that'd be operating in the ethical enclaves. I mean, it's just an option that anyone can, you know, take up. Whereas again, with agorism, you know, as Konkin said, well, I guess it's Gyoda, you know, partially, but, do or do not, there is no try. That's agorism. You've got to do it. You've got to trade in these in the black and gray markets to be an agorist. Whereas, you know, ethical enclaves are just simply, you know, an option. And then also too, I mean, Vonnegutans are fine with coexisting with the state. It's not you know, a revolutionary idea. It's, you know, finding freedom now, without asking for permission and without, you know, getting, you know, thousands upon thousands of, you know, colleagues in the counter economy. You know, just like the agorists, you know, you know, Konkin's goal of being choking the state. So I guess that's mostly all I have, Kyle, but I'll turn it over to you, man.
Yeah, I would just say, you know, I think people really should consider not having such a nasty attitude towards black market entrepreneurs just more generally. I think that the mainstream media has really, as effectively, they might as well be state-run media, considering, you know, their investors and such, topic for another time, that essentially they have a direct financial interest and also, you know, sensationalism and all that in demonizing anybody who makes their living off of the black market. Now, that being said, there's also the gray market, which is very interesting because it's a fact of life. People do survive off of the gray market and so forth, but it's not really demonized anywhere near the extent that black markets are. And I find that rather interesting that there would be people who would basically say that, you know, gray markets can be kind of like whatever, right? But then, oh, the black markets is like this incredibly different thing. And it's like, no, actually, gray and black markets are more similar than not, because they're not playing by the little 3x5 card of the white market little box where everything is taxed and regulated and such. So at the end of the day, I would say this, Shane. If people want their freedom and they're willing to take on a certain amount of risk and not force others to take on levels of risk that they are not comfortable with, then ethical enclaves really are one answer to the question of what do you do with these unjust laws, these forms of lawfare that are being waged against, you know, individuals? How do you deal with it? You know, some people do the interstice route, and this is another route that I guess would be a parallel one to go by.
Yes, yes. So again, you know, Vonnie was yours for the making. It is yours for the making. So if you want to go the legal interstices route, you know, just take Rayo's, you know, warnings into consideration. Don't rely upon them, but utilize them if they'll assist you. And you know, if you're, you know, if you're more inclined to risk, you know, ethical enclaves are, may definitely be an option for you. And there are, you know, with each new law arises a new possibility for profit or each new regulation or whatever. So there's an endless possibility for folks, for ethical enclave entrepreneurs or, you know, synonymously, you know, Agoras. So, you know, and Kyle, just one other point here, you know, if this episode didn't just show the fact that, you know, ethical enclave entrepreneurs and Agoras aren't pretty much exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
Then I don't know what else can we really say.
Right, right. And just to finish out here, there's two brief quotes I would like to read that I think kind of really kind of end this on a bang. So Claire Wolf has written before that, quote, "You can be convicted of violating laws that don't exist, as plenty of tax criminals have been. Ask the IRS for copies of the laws you're allegedly breaking, and they'll respond with legalistic gobbledygook. I have a friend who once testified as an expert witness in a tax case. Her expertise? Grammar. On the stand, she diagrammed a mega monster sentence from the tax code and proved the alleged regulation couldn't be obeyed because it literally had no meaning in the English language. Still, people get arrested for disobeying it. Bottom line, you're no longer a law-abiding citizen. There are simply too many laws to abide. And it doesn't matter whether they call them laws, rules, regulations, or something else altogether. You break them altogether. So with laws like these, who even wants to be a law-abiding citizen? And then finally, even Rayo himself, in a different article, said the following, and I think this is relevant to ethical enclaves. Liberty depends on laws and their interpretations, and so is easily destroyed. Laws and their interpretations often change. Big Brother already has 60 million laws and regulations or so. If all laws were consistently enforced, almost every man, woman, and child would be in prison for one or more violations. But Big Brother can only extort so much taxes to hire bludge and build spy devices. And taxes are already to or beyond the point of diminishing returns. Each additional rule to be enforced means existing rules get enforced less."
All right. There it is. That's a good point to end on. Anything else, Kyle?
No, that's it. It's just, you know, the state is not really this monolith that can harm everybody all the time. There are limitations to its capabilities. And so that's the venue that, you know, ethical enclave entrepreneurs can exploit for fun and profit.
I like that. For fun and profit. Very good, very good. So next week we'll be diving into Free Isles and Free Ports, which will launch a mini series of sorts into some potential solutions that you know, Rayo offered, just kind of chimed in on, and we'll get into some other interesting stuff as well, such as some case studies that are available on the website now as part of some history. The following episode we will be discussing exactly what Rayo had to say about them, and believe it or not, you know, the Free Isles Project, we mentioned this in TVP episode 1, the Free Isles Project sparked a handful of attempts at founding new libertarian countries, so we'll dig into the history a little bit, you know, give some case studies, and then see what Rayo had to say, and it's gonna be one heck of a ride. Thanks so much for tuning in. The website is VonniePodcast.com. We'll talk to you next week.